Welcome to Off the Court, presented by Point Guard U. Today we are joined by Luke Olson. Luke, super pumped to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. We are excited to have you on. We'll kind of get right into it. For our listeners that might not know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into coaching high school basketball?
Yeah, so I'm head coach at Bennington. It's a suburb of Omaha, Nebraska. And so I grew up a coach's kid. My dad was head football coach for a lot of years. And so I was always involved in the game, a lot of games, you know, football, basketball, track, baseball. I mean, you name it, I played it. And I was really fortunate, you know, to play for some really good coaches in high school. And I played college basketball at Hastings College for a guy by the name of Mike Trader, who was really influential with me. And so I've seen a lot of different styles. And I actually, after I graduated college, did not go into coaching. I went into banking for about a year and a half. And I just missed the passion and the intensity and the just the grind of sports. So I got back into it, coached college for a couple of years under Lance Creech at Hastings College, and then took an assistant job at Millard North for under Chip Baugh. And so I say those names, those guys have been obviously really, you know, successful, really talented coaches that I learned from. And I think that's what all coaches need, is they need to be groomed in a lot of different ways. And I saw a lot of different styles, kind of developed my own, what I thought was going to be the type of style that I could fit in best. And I took the Bennington job about 12 years ago, and I've been here ever since. I love the community. There's a lot of interest. A lot of kids in this area are very motivated and very, you know, they're inclined to want to be, you know, good in sports. We got a lot of good coaches, a lot of good teachers. So I've been fortunate. I've been involved with a lot of good coaches, learned a lot of different things along the way. And you kind of get to a spot where you kind of feel like you understand what you want your program to be known for. And so every year we try to get a little bit better by learning from other coaches. But it's been a fun journey, and we're not done yet. I got more years, but right now we're liking where we are. My wife and I have three kids. One of them plays for me, so we're loving life right now.
What is that like, having your son on? Is it your son?
Yes,
your son on the team. What's that like?
Yeah, you know, I love it. He loves it some days, I think, and I get that because I was a coach's kid, and I know that there's, you know, you get treated differently, right or wrong. That's just how it goes. I'm lucky. He's a great kid. Works really hard. Talented kid, does a really good job. And so I love being around him every single day. I know sometimes when you get to high school, you don't get to see your kids very often. When they do have downtime, they want to go with their buddies. And I understand that, but when I'm practicing games, just being around him on a daily basis, I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's something that I'll really enjoy for the next, he's got for two more years when he graduates. You know, I'll miss it just because he's just such a fun kid to be around.
That's definitely a perk of being a coach, I think. But it's a trade-off, because so much of coaching, you're away from family. Mm-hmm. And then those few years you get to finally coach your kid. That's, I imagine, it's probably got to be one of the sweetest feelings.
It is. It's fun. And you're right. It's a grind. And my family understands it really well. My wife's really supportive. She allows us to go try to, you know, in order to be good, you do have to put in a lot of time. And that's not always the easiest thing for families. So we try to mix in family time and try to maintain a good balance. And because it can get unhealthy, you know, you can put too much time and ends up being a large source of stress. So my family has been a good stress relief, and we try to balance that, which I think every coach probably does, but it's been a challenge.
100%. And I think as a former coach myself, like, even when you're home, sometimes mentally it's easy to not be mentally home. You know, you're right, thinking about what you saw on film earlier. Maybe you're breaking down film. You're thinking about, man, my point guard's grades aren't where they need to be. You're thinking about everything and some that you shouldn't be thinking about when you're home, but you just can't help it.
Right.
But I mean, I kind of touched on a little bit, even just the concern of academics. I think a modern coach, I feel like, you know, old school coaches maybe didn't concern themselves as much in the whole player. But I feel like now in modern coaching, you know, you're a teacher, you're a coach, you're a parent, you're a father figure to some of these guys. You know, you're filling, wearing a lot of hats. You know, how do you make sure your students are, you know, not only excelling on the court, but also in the classroom?
Yeah, it's a tough topic. You know, I think it comes down to, you know, a lot of our athletes and our kids get pretty short-sighted. They're only focused on playing time and winning and getting a certain jersey and certain statistics. And I think the important thing is we try to give them an end game kind of mentality. You know, if you want to be good on the basketball court, it actually, there's a lot of factors that play in. And I think the more that they see connection between, you know, your math grade doesn't change how you play, but how you approach math class does. If you allow yourself to take shortcuts by not turning homework in, not being on top of grades, not talking to teachers, not doing things, that will filter into other areas of your life. And if you want to be as good a basketball player as you can possibly be, a lot of that is learning the benefit of grinding out hard things. And sometimes classes are the hardest thing for some of our athletes. And they need to see a connection between, if I take shortcuts in class, or if I don't fully commit to getting as good a grade as I'm able to commit to, that will impact your ability to play basketball in a lot of different ways. One, by eligibility, but more importantly, just by, if you're not trying to become the best version of yourself, it's really, really hard, I think, to be completely committed to one area of your life and allow yourself to slip in other ones. I mean, we really focus on trying to be as committed as we can. We talk about earning the right, you know, if when the big game comes and you're expected to make a big play, it just seems like it works out where kids that have been really sharp across the board, not just in practice, but in classroom, in the weight room, at home, on social media, the kids that have done the right thing have earned the right to make a big play in a big game. And we try to point that out. I mean, we'll show clips of previous years, and we'll show a kid hitting a big shot in a district championship and say, now, he made that shot back in August when nobody was watching, he was in the gym. Or he made that shot in September in the morning going in and seeing his math teacher. Like, you have to earn the right to make that shot. So when the shot comes, you're prepared for it. And that's not a two-hour day a deal. That's a 24-hour, seven-day a week. You got to get yourself in that right mind frame. And classroom's a big part of it. We also tell them, you know, you're a role model. You get a really small window. When you're a high school athlete, you have a lot of kids in your community that look up to you. And they know and they learn, and you get a very small window. Once you graduate, those kids don't, you're not as influential anymore, and you don't get the chance to be in that pedestal. And, you know, we joke about, like, when you're graduating, you're not going to have hundreds of thousands of people show up to watch you do a car loan, or to watch you sell something online, or watch you do a bank withdrawal or something like that. Like, you get a couple years where kids look at you like a hero, and you have to act and take advantage of that opportunity. Part of it's classroom. You know, kids follow people of character. And if you're doing one thing in a classroom that's opposite of what you're playing like, people know, kids find out. It may not happen right away, but you have to get some kind of a long-term vision for what type of player and what type of program you want to become. And if you do it the right way, a lot of times the short stuff that they're concerned about, they kind of take care of themselves.
I love that. And I think you kind of touched on this too, of like saying, like, you know, he made that shot in September, he made that shot in August, you know, and kind of leading into our next question, I feel like so many kids nowadays are living in a microwave world where they kind of want these fast expectations. They have a goal and they expect, hey, pop it in for 30 seconds, I should be able to have it. Or I show up first day of practice and I'm ready to get after it. And to have these expectations of big goals when in reality, you know, those the kids that are showing up on day one, that's their first time touching the ball, they're miles behind where they should be.
Right.
And so kind of with that, leading into the next question, you know, keeping in mind our audience of, you know, we have 1500 campers all across the country, Colorado to New York. And in the game of basketball, there's only five starting spots. What advice would you have for a kid who maybe feels like he's on the outside looking in, itching for a little more playing time, trying to get his coach's attention? What are some things the coach wants to see? What advice do you have for a kid who's just not seeing the results he wants to see?
It's tough. You know, that's one thing that I think is probably the hardest thing with basketball, is just the limited number of spots. And a lot of times rotations are in the 7, 8, 9 range. And so sometimes you feel like you're on the outside looking in. I just feel like there's always, and this is a good life skill, you know, there's a million things during the day and during our life that we cannot control. And the more attention we spend on that, the more stressed we get and the less we get out of the day, because we're putting energy in things that we can't fully control. So we talk about, you know, what do you have control over? And if you put yourself, we ask our kids this too, like, if you were me, what do you think you'd look for? And there are some things in practice you can control. You cannot control making jump shots. You cannot control turnovers. You cannot control a lot of those statistical parts of the game, but you can control your communication and your energy. You can control what type of teammate you are. And so we try to tell our kids, you know, the more you put energy into those things, that we call them the accountabilities, like the more you can put energy into being the best talker and being the guy with the most energy, and to just embrace your role. And no matter what the situation is, understanding that everybody's out there, you know, their number one goal is to go get playing time. And we get that. Like, I wouldn't want a kid out there that didn't want that. But if you put your energy into just trying to get more playing time, a lot of times you're going to play a lot worse. So instead, put your energy into what you can control, like talking, playing hard, moving on from mistakes, being a good teammate, sticking around after practice. Like, if you put your energy into those things, a lot of times the playing time and the starting, those things kind of take care of themselves. And we just find that, you know, the kids that focus less on playing time end up receiving more of it, because they're putting energy into being the best player they can be. So I would just tell a kid, if anybody's struggling out there, like I get it. I think everybody that's been in a coaching shoes has understood, you know, I've been the guy that's played all the minutes and the guy that's played very little minutes. And so I understand all the roles. Nobody wants to be a guy on the end of the bench, but if you're there, or if you feel like you're there, put your energy, go into practice and just be the best version of your player that you can be. Talk, you know, be the first guy in drill, stuff outside of practice, shooting around. I mean, you get rewarded. Actions have consequences. And if you continue to put in, you know, put your actions into the type of, you know, you're making decisions that make you the best version of yourself, those consequences will come down the line. It may not be tomorrow. It's not a short-term fix, but if you do it consistently enough, you'll start to see results. And I think that's, you know, my son has been in those shoes as a parent. It's hard as a parent watching when your son or your daughter is maybe not playing big minutes and you feel like they're kind of on a spot where they could be more, you know, more playing time. And I feel like those are pretty good opportunities to learn life skills. And sometimes parents want to bail them out, email a coach, you know, find a way, transfer me. And the reality is life's going to throw a lot harder curveballs than this. And so when your son or daughter is in that spot, give them, you know, give them tools, give them strategies. What can I do? What can you work on? If you want something bad enough, then your action should reflect that. And at no point would complaining be a positive thing. At no point would bailing them out would be a positive thing. Find a way to give them support, but also let them struggle. You know, struggling is something our parents don't let kids do very often. And I understand it because I'm a parent and it's really hard to see your son or daughter struggle. But I think that goes back to what we talked about earlier with when you're short-sighted, you're only focused on what's going on right now and the stuff that's negative. When you think about long-term and the fact of, okay, he's in a tough spot. What would I want him to do in the future when I'm not around to help him? How would I want him to handle a tough spot? Would I want him to complain, transfer, quit, leave? Or I want him to figure out a way to battle himself through it. And even if he doesn't get more playing time, he's going to become a better person by learning. And I think that's going to carry on into aspects of life that are going to be more important. Like when he's got a job or a marriage or he's a father. And when things don't go well, how is he going to handle that in the future? And I think those opportunities, whether it's playing time or other things, if we keep in mind what we're doing this whole thing for, the whole purpose of sports in general, I think sometimes we'd have a different mindset of how we approach those situations. And if I get so just caught up in the moment, which is stats, playing time, scholarship, stuff of that nature.
100%. I love that. And I think it's good for parents to hear. Obviously, I'm a new parent myself. I have a 1-year-old and, you know, as a parent, you want to give your kid everything. You want them to have a good life. But at the same time, like when you think about the attributes you want your kid to have, you want them to be tough. You want them to be patient. You know, then you're not, if you were to create a human and want them to have those attributes, you probably couldn't give them everything right away. They wouldn't develop patience. If you want to be tough, life probably shouldn't be extremely easy. So a lot of times it's tough for parents to see those character building moments that make sports so great unfold. Sometimes it's hard for them to sit back and see that. But I think, you know, kind of leading into our next topic of multi-sport athletes, I think, you know, I think it's good for parents to also see their kids under different coaches, to have different opportunities and thrive. I think sometimes we see some parents put all their eggs in one basket. And so when they maybe are sitting at the 8th spot on the bench, if they've quit all their other sports, it means so much more to them. Right. And it's harder for, in my opinion, for kids to, you know, accept a role of being like, hey, I'm a practice squad guy. I'm gonna make the starter so much better. I'm gonna work for my spot. I'll try to shine my senior year because they've put all their eggs in their basket. But besides that example, I'm curious to know what's your take on the benefits of being a multi-sport athlete?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. You know, at Bennington, our football team, who last year, all 5 of my starters were on the football team. This year, I think we probably have 5 of our top 10-ish on the football team. They just won the state semifinals, so they're playing in the state championship game next Monday. And we start practice today. And so, you know, there's some, I think, coaches that are maybe in basketball that don't want multi-sport guys because it's a hindrance. I think last year we played our first game with 3 practices with everybody, which is a short-term discomfort. But I feel like the benefits outweigh, you know, they get, you know, different coaching. There's a toughness, you know, winning, I think, breeds winning. And so if you can get your kids involved in multiple sports and make every sport successful, I just feel like that's a good thing for the school and good thing for the culture. And the other thing is I see kids doing year-round sports and I just see such a tremendous amount of burnout. I see injuries. You know, what some of my most successful athletes, when they get to the end of their high school career, they're just tired. They don't want to go play college anymore because they've played one sport so long that their body, you know, I remember at the end of my college career, I was wiped out. Like my body was shot from all the games I'd played, and I was a multi-sport athlete. But by the end of college, I had played so many games. I think some of our high school kids are at that point before they get out of high school with summer games, fall games. I mean, just the amount of volume that their bodies are going through, I don't think is a healthy thing. I think there's some benefit to it. I do think there's a benefit to year-round shooting and year-round working on your ball handles, but I don't think you need to play, you know, some kids play 60, 70, 90 games in a summer. That's a lot, you know, as opposed to you could still shoot and work on your skills, but you can also be a member of the football team or a member of the track team or the baseball team, and you can still become a better athlete that way. And I think it helps when you have older athletes that are multi-sport athletes that you can show as examples and say, you know, this person was an all-state basketball player, but he also was a member of the football team. And also we talked to our guys about if basketball is your number one sport, which I totally get, you're going to need guys on your team that are not basketball number one guys that need to be player 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you want them to be fully committed to you in your sport, it would help if you would become player 5, 6, 7, 8 in their sport. And if you go, you know, if you're a role player on the football team, but you're committed, when you get to basketball and you need who was a starting quarterback in football, if you need him to be a role player, he's going to be a lot more likely to do that because you sacrifice for him. And I think if we get so separate where everybody's just doing their own sport, I think you lose some of that cohesiveness and the culture is not as strong. And so we're firm believers. I think some of the best athletes I've ever had have been multi-sport athletes. I don't know if I've ever had just a basketball guy. I've had guys that have done multiple sports, and I see such a value in it, one from a coaching standpoint, but also just from a school culture standpoint. I just think there's so many good positive things coming from guys doing, you know, multiple sports.
I love that. And I think there's value too. And I think you've touched on it, like hearing, like seeing different leadership styles from different coaches. I know, and you will resonate with this, especially as a coach's kid. You know, you see aspects in certain coaches you really want to emulate. And I'm sure you emulate a lot of your dad. You also probably see certain aspects of coaches. You're like, I'm not going to do that when I'm a coach. So I think, you know, it's good for kids to also see other different coaching styles. And I think even in different sports, there's different roles for leaders. I think when you go on a football field, there's six more people than there are on a basketball court at a time. You might be able to step up in a role maybe as the leader of the defensive line. Or maybe you're the leader of the offensive line, where there's more opportunities for maybe you're the leader of the wide receiver room. I think leadership positions are super important for kids to develop. It's tough to give them opportunities to lead, but I'm leading to ask, how do you go about giving your kids opportunities to become leaders? It's a tough question. It's honestly $1 million question. I think if I had a correct answer to this, I'd be able to write a book.
Right.
When I was coaching, I would try to, if there was a decision that didn't really matter, where we went to eat afterwards or what color warm-up we wore, I'd try to give them those. But I struggled to try to find appropriate times for kids to become leaders. So right. Prefacing this question, it's a hard one. So
yeah, it is. And we try to work on that because I think leadership's so important, especially player-led leadership. I think, like you talked about, there are some decisions that really aren't that important in my mind, and we try to let the kids make those decisions as often as possible. We also involve them in other aspects. We've tried different things each year. It just depends on the kid. We've had some really, really good leaders, and we've had some years that we've struggled with the leadership. And on the years that we struggle, just trying to find ways where kids feel comfortable. I think a big aspect of leadership is vulnerability. Like kids have to be okay being vulnerable, which is a really hard thing for kids to do with social media. And on occasion, if they do become vulnerable, you know, a lot of their teammates don't know how to handle that. And I think just teaching the selflessness and the vulnerability piece is really, really challenging. So I think just, you know, opportunities, you know, when we do youth camps, giving our kids voices, letting them decide how we want to approach what we want to do with the youth kids, you know, having them talk to our, you know, middle school students about what it takes to be a good athlete. Also, you know, we involve them in different aspects of the program. There's been some years where I've invited four or five kids that I felt are leadership, and we bring them in and they plan practice with me in the morning in advance just to give them kind of a say in how practice is going to run. It also means if practice isn't going well, it's on you. Like you develop, you plan the practice. There's a drill you don't want to do, and there's one that you do want to drill. The drill better go well because it's you. Now they have an accountability piece. A lot of times, you know, if they just show up to practice, they're just going through the motions. There's not much accountability. There's not much engagement. But if they're planning the practice, or on occasion we've had them plan scouts, we have them watch film, of the person they're going to guard, and they bring the scout in. And if they're wrong, we talk about it. And we, you know, just kind of making sure that they know that there's an accountability piece, that if you're going to be a leader, if people are going to look to you, it can't be something that you turn on and off. You got to be something that you're, you know, in, you know, engaged. And when they see like a bigger picture, I think they're a lot more apt to do that. But it's challenging. I mean, every year, you know, we try to find different ways to do it. And every year you just become a little more challenging. One of the things that we're trying to do at Bennington is get a leadership academy started as a class where we can bring kids in during the day. Cause I think as coaches, we've talked a lot about, there's so many things to do during the season that the last thing you want to do is bring a kid in for an extra hour and just talk about leadership concepts, just cause they're so busy, you know, with class and homework and weight room and games and practices. But if we can do it during the day and talk about, you know, explore different leadership concepts, bring guest speakers in, read leadership books, have leadership conversations, teach and put situational things. What would you do in this situation? And talk about it in front of the class. I think that is such a powerful tool that we could possibly use if our district will go for it, just because it takes no time away from the kid. And it's going to be really, I think it'd be a class that kids get really interested in. You know, it's not like a class where they feel obligated to do the homework. I think a lot of our guys would come in more excited. And we could probably put them in positions in a less stressful situation like a practice where it gets pretty intense. When you can get them away from that and talk leadership concepts, I think that can be a really powerful tool. So hoping we can find a way to make that work here in the near future.
That would be incredible. I think that's teaching to the whole kid and, you know, life skills that go far beyond just the athletic field. I definitely think that's awesome. Yeah. I think hopefully a district goes for that. But you know, it sounds like something my district wouldn't do back when I was teaching, but it sounds like something that kids need and would love, you know, it's definitely really cool. I never heard of that. I think that would be sick. Looking back on your coaching career, are there any moments that stick out to you as, you know, extremely memorable, just something you'll never forget, or any achievements that really stand out to you?
I think the main one is I was a young coach and we had just changed classifications, bumped up a class. And so we felt, at the time, we were pretty small population-wise compared to the classes or the other schools in our class. And we had a couple of really, really successful seasons in terms of just a lot of wins. But we lost in the district championships. We had a chance to go to state and we got beat. And they were some of the most painful, probably the most painful athletic moments I've ever had, both as a coach and as a player. When you look at it, just the amount of pain in the locker room and just, you know, that sick feeling in your stomach, the pit, just the sadness and the feeling like you kind of let people down. And those moments, I remember somebody told me that those, a lot of times that adversity you go through, if you handle it the right way, it can take you places that you could have never been. And I remember the very last district championship we lost, when I was younger, you know, it was painful and we were expected when we got upset, didn't play well, choked. You could probably say just the moment was too big. We just weren't prepared, but the stuff we learned from that game propelled us in the next season. And we ended up going on a pretty good run, winning several championships in a row in the district, riding conference. And just, I remember looking back on that night and the kids were engaged and it was such a painful moment, but it also allowed us to get somewhere that we might not have gotten had we not had to go through that, not the pain. And so I think that's something that when you're older, you can look back and you can pinpoint those moments. And at the time I didn't know it, and it was really, really painful. But I look back and that was probably the most important moment of my career just because of what we learned, you know, moving forward. And the next year when we did win that first district championship, just the amount of joy and relief that you felt, you could go back and say it was worth it. I didn't think so the year before. But at that moment, I just remember our kids and just the joy in the faces and how much fun it was. And then the momentum we took, you know, in the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I think that's probably the one when you talk about, you know, most memorable coaching moment. It was that. It was the pain that turned into joy the following year and just the amount of stuff you can learn. And that's what I think a lot of kids, I mean, that's what we get into sports for, is learning how to handle that adversity so that you're more prepared when you get outside of the basketball arena. And so I think that, I mean, obviously I love all the wins, but I feel like the older I get, the losses hurt you more and the wins are more like a relief. You just want to move on to the next game. So I think you got to be intentional about really enjoying the moment and just not getting too caught up in all the stresses that, you know, coaching can on occasion bring on.
I love how you said sometimes the losses can take you further. I lost by 2 points in the state championship my senior year. And then the following year, obviously wasn't part of the team, went off to college, but they won the state championship. But I feel like even me personally, I feel like there was so much character growth that came from that, and forced humility you know, whereas if had it been the other way, I would have maybe had a mega dose of unnecessary confidence where, you know, humility, yeah, getting so close, but still having to be humble. And yeah, there's a lot that came from that. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. So how we end our podcast here, we have a segment called Full Court Press where there are some quick hitting questions, a little lighthearted, and we'll see how you do. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Sure. Yeah.
All right, cool. So I'll give you an easy one to start. Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite cereal?
Raisin Bran.
Is it milk before cereal or cereal before milk?
Always cereal first.
Okay, I put that question in there just to make sure I'm not talking to a psycho. Otherwise, I would just end the podcast right there.
I agree.
Cut the cord.
I agree.
Favorite movie of all time?
Shawshank Redemption.
I hear that one a lot. Yeah, I hear that one a lot. Would you rather give up appetizers or desserts for the rest of your life?
Appetizers.
Good choice. So many desserts options. So many. Appetizers, this much of the menu. Desserts, there's entire businesses based on desserts. Best Gatorade color?
Blue.
Good choice. Best, this one's a tough one. And sometimes this question, so it's best player you've ever played against. But I'll say this, and sometimes it takes a little thinking. Mm-hmm. Best player you've ever played against or played with. And if it's not a player, if there's nothing coming to mind, I can give you an out with coach.
I know the player. I was in college. I played a guy by the name of Brandon Woodstra from Northwestern. Ended up going over and playing in Europe. Really talented. He felt like he was a young guard. Averaged like 29 a game, and it didn't matter what we did. He had very little trouble scoring on us. So he would be top of the list.
I love it. Loudest crowd you've ever played in front of?
State semifinal game, York versus Bennington.
I love it. Well, Coach, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you taking time to talk with us. Give us a quick expectation. What can we expect for some Badger basketball this year?
You know, like I said, we'll be a little short-staffed early. We got our football guys still playing, so hopefully they go get after it. But we'll take them when we get them, and I think we'll be playing our best basketball in February. We got some young kids, new kids that haven't had a ton of varsity experience, but it's a competitive group, so expectations don't change. We're hoping to be playing really well late February and making a run at it.
I love it. Be sure to send us a live stream link. If you got one, we'll catch a couple games.
Awesome. Will do. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
Thank you.